Welcome to Hashtag Finance Master, a weekly show where Anders Leo Lindberg discusses the latest trends in finance and accounting with a global audience via LinkedIn audio. Recorded live, anyone can tune in and take part. Just raise your hand and share the stage. Will you join Anders next time? For now, kick back, relax, and enjoy this week's show.
Welcome to another episode of the Hashtag Finance Master Show. Today's episode is one of the special ones because we have been speaking to a senior finance leader, Nikita Podkolzin, about the evolving role of the CFO. So we have also Nikita here today with us. I'm going to bring him on the stage in just a little bit. Hello, Nikita. Welcome to the stage.
Hello, Anders. Thanks for inviting me here today for this wonderful event. Hi, everyone. My name is Nikita. I'm the Global Finance Director for L'Oréal, in charge of the e-commerce business worldwide. I'm happy to be here and really thrilled to move forward.
Great stuff. So the article released called The Changing Role of the CFO, How to Embrace Change and Build Resilience. We spoke to Nikita about some of the main trends that have impacted the CFO role over the past years and how he's seen it from his finance leadership role. So, of course, the future of work continues to evolve. How do we navigate these changes to ensure performance at the highest level? We spoke to Nikita about this to help us understand more about how that future of work might look and what the key challenges might be and what individuals and companies can do to prepare. Nikita is a seasoned finance professional who has expert insights into the evolving role of the CFO in today's dynamic business landscape. He has a diverse career spanning different countries and companies, and Nikita shed light on what he has noticed and learned from the transformation of the finance function over the past decade. So we'll delve into a few of these topics, and then we'll ask Nikita to expand on it. So it's transitioning from data crunching to business partnering. You've probably heard about this on the show many times before, but it's always good to hear from the practitioner as well. So the finance function has transitioned from primarily focusing on data crunching tasks to becoming strategic business partners. We introduced ERP systems and budgeting tools, and finance professionals have therefore shifted their focus towards higher value tasks, like, for instance, providing the business with insights and taking the lead on business transformation projects. And Nikita emphasized in our talk with him the importance of finance professionals possessing a comprehensive and in-depth understanding of each function in the organization, thereby enabling them to act as the connective tissue and add value, bridging gaps in understanding between the departments. So Nikita, maybe you can expand a little bit, and it would be great if you can share an example of how you have sort of acted as this kind of connective tissue between departments. I think everyone would be curious to hear about that.
Yeah, maybe I would call it even a little bit the octopus effect, or the role to be the octopus of the company. This is what we need to play. And well, coming from the FMCG world, the best example is obviously to be connecting sales departments, marketing departments, and the logistic departments in order to define the best business models and find the best road to markets, which we actually do quite a lot on a daily basis, because that FMCG is a very dynamic environment, very volatile. We're introducing new products on the market very often. And each time we need to play the role of these connectors to define, find, and animate the best possible decisions.
Thanks a lot for expanding a little bit about that. And you mentioned, of course, that FMCG, which probably is the case for many other businesses as well, is a very dynamic and fast-changing business. And of course, we don't live in a static world. I wouldn't even say anymore, because we've never lived in a static world, but the pace of change, of course, increases. So we need to overcome the challenges that brings with it and embrace the change. It's very important to be able to adapt to the current rate of change, and something that you have also noted to be difficult for individuals and companies to do, Nikita. And certainly in my capacity now, working with change management projects in finance organizations across the world, we see this as well, right? It's very easy to learn a new tool or to learn a process, but actually embedding it into your way of working, that's typically where the challenge comes across. So the solution to this is to choose flexible and agile tools and for colleagues to quickly adapt and to change, thereby realizing the benefits of the transformation more quickly. And of course, from Nikita's experience, it's also because there's a built-in resistance to deploying these new tools and adapting business processes across different functions. It is, of course, time-consuming and difficult to learn new ways of working. It's also really important for finance professionals to actively seek exposure to external events and industry trends to stay informed and surf the wave of the global transformation. And maybe, Nikita, you could explain a little bit about how have you helped colleagues to embrace the change rather than resist the change. I think this is something we are all struggling with doing effectively.
Yeah, I would say the key role of the leader here and in those changing situations is to build the right mindset, first for yourselves and then afterwards to replicate it to the teams. I mean, we're all human beings. We're all, I truly believe, a little bit conservative in our minds, right? And we're somehow resistant to changes. But the reason we're the leaders is actually that we can accept and have a look forward to embrace what the change will give us, what it will give to the company and to the whole organization. So I would say overall, the mindset is the starting point. You first start with yourself, and then as the leader, you do work with your team extensively. It never comes with one day. It requires time, efforts, and lots of repetition and bringing in the shared and common vision towards the future. So I would say that the role and the key idea is to elaborate on the future benefits. That's the only way to move forward.
Great stuff. Thanks for sharing that, Nikita. And another thing I find is that involving the people that are having these changes happen to them in the change management process is often a great way to do this. Sometimes you choose the ones that are most positive towards the change. Other times you can actually choose the ones that are most negative towards the change to bring them in and also get some learnings from it. So there's many different ways you can go about this, but really happy to hear this also from your perspective. So of course, with all this change happening, the CVO4 role has continued to evolve. We've been speaking about this in this series here, rebranding the CFO. And now from Nikita's perspective, I mean, you've also noticed this evolving of the role. And what's uncanny is how close the CFO role evolution and wider company transformation have been so linked and run almost in parallel with the overall transformation of other C-suite positions, but I think more so the overall company. I'm not saying other C-suite roles haven't changed. Of course, they have. I just feel the CFO role is one of those that have evolved the most. So you also pointed out that the CFO role is one of those most important positions there, then it plays a role in connecting all the C-suite roles across the organization and connecting the dots in general. Almost like how the spokes connected to the center of a wheel, right? So you're having the CFO, probably the CEO where as well, and they're in the middle. And then you have the different functions of the business expanding out to make sure the whole wheel can run around or the whole business can run around. So as companies continue to undergo digital sales, supply chain transformations, and so on, finance professionals must continue to adapt in order to ensure alignment so that they can continue to achieve the organization's strategic goals. Now, then you sort of went on, Nikita, to highlight five ways the CFO role has evolved. So I'm going to go through these five ways, and then I'm going to ask you to share any further thoughts or insights you have on it. After that, we're going to open up the floor for questions so people can come up and ask questions to you or, of course, share their own perspectives on this role evolution. So the first one is around enhanced decision-making. So with advancements in automation and digitization, CFOs can now leverage technology to provide timely and valuable insights drawing from their expertise across different functions. Number two is consolidation of repetitive tasks. Shared service centers have emerged to handle operational tasks, freeing up time for finance professionals to engage in more strategic value-adding activities. Third is embracing global trends. So of course, CFOs must adapt to shift in sales, such as the move from offline to online and from B2B to B2C. This requires building new capabilities, investigating new opportunities, and redesigning business models. Probably if you go 15, 20 years back, you wouldn't have seen this on the list of CFO responsibilities. You put it somewhere else. This is key for CFOs to get involved in today. Number four is a focus on ESG. I think we'll see a lot more on ESG in this channel also in the coming weeks. But the emphasis on sustainability and social responsibility means that finance professionals need to measure and optimize their company's environmental impact, but also that the CFO needs to include forward-thinking analysis on these metrics and integrate sustainable practices into the business strategy. And I think this is really golden insight here. If CFOs are not able to take ESG beyond reporting, it's going to be a tricky, challenging exercise, and it's going to leave a lot of opportunities and value creation on the table. So this is really imperative that CFOs step up here and really go beyond the reporting. The last one is adoption of AI. AI has, of course, the potential to be a significant disruptor for finance professionals. It's important, however, to stay curious, involved, and emotionally intelligent when dealing with AI to benefit from the adoption and changes rather than suffer from it. So these were the five key trends we discussed, Nikita. Maybe you want to expand on it or perhaps give some examples from what you have seen, how it works in your role or in previous roles. It would be good to get some more practical examples on this.
Yeah, let me maybe start with the last point and the adoption of AI. And we had this discussion with you several days ago. And I think even since those days, when we talked, the technology has moved forward. Things are changing that fast. So we're not even able to onboard the previous change. The new one is coming. Now it's really flying. And we really need to stay in shape to follow what's going on. And the danger here is that normally when you work in the corporate environment, you're so much attached to your day-to-day and to your operation, to your business operations and operational tasks, that you may lose those trends which are happening outside. And AI these days is the best example of it. Now, since the time we talked, I've bumped into several researches in finance field, which have been conducted, and they were studying basically the efficiency that AI can bring compared to the, say, more junior financial roles. And obviously AI was leading. I would say 2 weeks ago it was futuristic, but now it's going to be the new normal in several months. Probably I will be very interesting to see how all the finance community across the world will be adapting it and will be adjusting to those new realities. Then this falls in the same way to the repetitive tasks. They're allowed to do that in a good way. Before that, we were passing through restructuring processes. Many multinationals or national companies with many branches, they were consolidating their finance activities, legal activities in one phase with shared service centers in order to optimize the structures and also in order to free up time for added value tasks. Rather than decision making, and this is what you were elaborating on before and what we shared about the spike concept, is basically, I truly believe that in this context, we're not only finance professionals anymore. We need to be a little bit of everything. We need to be experts in sales and marketing and supply chain, in overall business management, in order to add value. Now, just doing finance in the old, I would say, academic way is not something which will bring value from us. Now we really need to be the backup or the bright brain of the executive committees and of our organizations.
Thanks for sharing those further insights, Nikita. I'm just going to open up the floor if someone wants to come up here and ask questions, or of course, share your own perspectives. Why do you think about if you want to come on up? And maybe wanted to dig a bit further into the ESG part, Nikita. How do you see the impact of that in your current role in a company like L'Oréal, seen from a finance perspective? Is it something you're discussing in when you talk to your business stakeholders, or in some way you already been asked to report on it? What have you seen there?
Well, obviously, it's the hot topic. I would say L'Oréal has embraced on this journey for quite long ago, and I believe we are leading the industry overall as the company. Obviously, the topic is complex in the way of potential reporting of those impacts. It's not that easy. Everyone is finding the way. It really depends on the industry, on the company, etc. But what we see clearly, not in L'Oréal, but overall in the industries, across the industries, with those companies who add value to the environment, they seem to be adding most value to their financial performance as well. So these two subjects are very much interconnected, and I'm pretty much sure that environmental and social contributions, they end up in the outstanding performance results compared to those companies who do not embark on those journeys.
Great. I am fully aligned there, and just to the audience as well. Keen to your perspective on this ESG as well. How have you seen that creeping into your role as a finance professional, and what are your thoughts on what's coming at us? We'll soon be hit with a lot more reporting requirements. So how do we go beyond reporting even in this area here? When speaking of ESG, Nikita, I mean, a lot of it often is on the environmental / sustainability impact. You also mentioned a bit the social part, and maybe more so inside companies. Have you seen a change in how we talk about the people and development and future of work in terms of now we've been, of course, we're pandemic where people work from home, now it's hybrid work. Do you see sort of that, those finance roles changing in general? Also considering how we're trying to work differently, also considering the social part of ESG.
Yeah, absolutely. It's the overall, I would say, triple bottom line concept. And we do act on the people and also act on it through our consumers. To me, it's a bit something which already, in a way, is common. I know that many organizations are only moving into this direction. And COVID was a great enabler, right? When we have started to care about employees more, about their mental health, about their well-being. And I would say the requirements from the potential employees and from the talents are higher. So this way or the other way, organizations, they are following. Obviously, it's not something that happens fast across the board, but the trends are there, and I see it pretty well also from my network outside of Florida.
Yeah, and I could imagine, I mean, there's a war for talent going on, right? I mean, we're in short supply of good finance professionals that can do many of the things you talked about in the interview, right? So actually being good business partners. So when you have interviews with candidates, are they asking different questions, right? Are they interested in both how you as a company are approaching ESG, but also what it will mean for them as individuals and what they can expect to see differently from a company like L'Oréal going forward? Maybe you can share some thoughts there as well.
I would say that quite often I don't need to answer questions because when the candidates come to us, they also come to us because they know that the company is super well advanced on these subjects. But what I wanted to share with you is that it's been a few days ago, by the way, I read several studies on Europe on the concerns that really worry the younger age population from the age of 18 to 24. And I was quite surprised that in a few European countries, and the last one I saw was Germany, when they are asked to answer the question, which what is the most in their lives, they say that this is climate change. So the number one was climate change, followed the appreciating cost of real estate. So indeed, it's something which will get more and more important when those younger people will grow up and they will become the major part of the population and the socially and economically active population. So definitely this is the trend, which is very clear and visible now.
Thanks for sharing and expanding on that, Nikita. We now have Josephine on stage. Josephine, feel free to unmute yourself, introduce yourself and share your perspective or ask questions.
Hi. I just wanted to really comment on the ESG point from my perspective and what I'm seeing. I work in the interim market. I work as small and medium entities. What I'm finding very much so with ESG at the moment is that procurement are utilizing it as a requirement when you're pitching for new business. I work in media more so, and it's becoming a fundamental of being able to prove that you have qualities. And I think that information is easier to capture in larger organizations than it is in smaller organizations. It needs a lot of data gathering, which isn't always available in smaller entities, I think, from my perspective and what I'm seeing anyway. But the movement is very much so that procurement are asking more and more about what your credentials are and how you can prove that. I appreciate that that feeds into their reporting, how much, you know, they can prove in the ESG quarters. So that was just really my feedback more than anything.
Thanks a lot for sharing that, Josephine. And I think there's new reporting requirements coming out next year. It will start with the bigger companies, but obviously as soon as the bigger companies need to start reporting on this, they need to take their own value chain even more seriously. And eventually the companies that are in the value chain of bigger companies will need to report themselves, even though they might not be a company. So it is definitely something that, for one, we cannot ignore. It's going to be mandatory. It's just now is the time where we have the opportunity, also in finance, to be proactive about a new topic that's coming at us with stronger and stronger force. And I'm always saying, wouldn't it be nice if for once we are actually taking a proactive approach and say, hey, we know we need to report and we need to figure that out. I'm not belittling that task because I know it's a huge task. As you say yourself, data is not always going to be readily available. Of course, not in small organizations, but even in large organizations, it might not be readily available. They might not have the tools to report it. So then it's going to be Excel sheets thrown around, lots of different challenges. But if we can go beyond the just reporting and say, oh, what does this mean for our business? And is what we're doing today the same thing we're going to be doing 5-10 years from now? What opportunities are we seeing? And of course, also, what are the risks? So it's a strategic conversation rather than reporting conversation. And if finance doesn't bring it to the table, someone else probably will. So that's just some third or fourth on that.
Yeah, you know, I concur. You know, we have to evolve and change how we're reporting, I think, and we have to add the matrix and mechanisms in, as you rightly say, as the larger companies require it. And as I mentioned, we're already seeing it with the larger entities requiring it from a procurement sort of environment and it being fundamental to winning pitches and so on and so forth. So regardless of the legislation, it's already filtering in as companies start to prepare for it. So I'm certainly already noticing it, the effects of it from the interim business, as I work as an interim in businesses. So it's already starting to filter. The fact that it isn't mandatory yet, I think it's neither here nor there at the moment. People are having the foresight that it is coming and therefore they're already making changes to how they're interacting with businesses and how they're electing new businesses to work with them.
Thanks, Josephine. And I'm just deep diving a little bit on the ESG topic because I think obviously ESG has been around for a while, but it's really starting to become serious business for companies. Before it was kind of like a voluntary thing they could do. And great to hear from, for instance, Nikita here about L'Oreal saying trying to take a leading role in their industry. And of course, that's something companies could choose to do in the past 5 to 10 years. I think there's a lot of benefits in doing that. Also, probably a lot of cost and difficult conversations to be had. But now it's not voluntary anymore. And I think that's why ESG is going to be one of the ones in the next 5-10 years that is really going to continue pushing and evolving the role of the CFO. And why not? Let's try to make it right from the beginning. We are at the end of today's show. I don't know, Nikita, if you have any parting thoughts for the audience here, you know, any advice to handle kind of the continued acceleration of pace of change, but also the evolution of finance roles in general. Any last insights you wanted to offer here?
Well, first of all, thanks again for animating this great discussion. My only advice, and this would be a bit of the repetition, what I said. The world is moving so fast, we really need to watch out not to miss a thing, because every day something new is on the stage. Let's keep it in mind and enjoy together this wonderful journey.
That's a great point about trying to enjoy the journey, right? I mean, if we constantly see it as something negative, it's not going to make it any better. Yeah, so try to embrace and get comfortable with the change somehow and enjoy the ride. I think there's lots of opportunities, lots of interesting things that we can work on as finance professionals. For instance, taking ESG to the strategic level or finding new ways of leveraging AI. I mean, the possibilities are almost endless. So on that cheery note, I'm going to go ahead and end today's show and stay tuned for the full interview with Nikita as well. So Nikita, thanks a lot for sharing your insights with us here today. And also in the interview, you can find my profile and the full one being released in the podcast later on. We truly appreciate that.
Thanks a lot, Anders. Thank you. Thank you, everyone.
Thanks. And also thanks to Josephine for coming up and sharing your perspectives on what you're seeing in the ESG space for finance professionals. I think I truly appreciate that. And finally, thanks to everyone Thanks so much. Bye for now.
You've been listening to Hashtag Finance Master, a weekly show recorded live on LinkedIn Audio. Don't forget to subscribe to stay updated on the latest trends in finance and accounting. And why not join Anders every Thursday on LinkedIn to share your own views and appear in the next episode?